Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Why does making friends as an adult feel so
what
hard?
What should I wear on a first
what
date?
What the hell is a formal
but that
hookup
was
not
first
good.
Home
what
so
do I want my life to look like in 5 years?
We want to know too.
Since 2012, the Every Girl has been an online destination to help women around the world achieve the life of their dreams. Now, we're excited to bring you the same inspiring content with the Every Girl podcast.
Welcome back to the Every Girl podcast. My God, do we have an incredible show for you guys today. I'm here with our podcast assistant, Emma Ginsberg.
Hello, welcome back to the show.
I know that I have said so many times that a conversation with a guest has changed my life because it really does. We are so lucky to have on such incredible and inspiring women that I am truly a different person today because of who I've gotten to learn from over the past year and a half and apply these lessons to my life.
I mean, every guest we have gives me so many things that I bring into my everyday.
And as we've heard from so many of you, a lot of you feel the same. But this episode will be one that I genuinely will never forget for the rest of my life. We are going to skip the Ask the Every Girl question today because I have got to tell you guys the story that transpired around this conversation. Emma, I haven't told you any details really, have I?
No. I'm very excited to hear the full story and everything that happened for you.
Okay. I don't know why, but I like shake whenever I tell the story, like I'm shaking right now. So for background, our amazing guest today is Susan Grau, who is a renowned celebrity medium and author who has been featured in various media outlets such as Goop and Elle magazine. As soon as I heard about Susan and her work, I wanted to have her on because I believe that the greatest lessons we can learn are not always from the most obvious sources. You know, I really wanted to find out what someone with this experience has to say about purpose and grief and loss and love and what we can learn from her. So I was super excited for this conversation. Her PR team emailed you, Emma, the day of. Just a little reminder to not ask for a reading. Yeah. Susan reserves readings for clients. That's a very normal thing. Anyone with any type of service, whether it's an astrologer, health coach, whatever, like typically do not do personal sessions or readings for a podcast. I feel like especially something as maybe like personal as a medium reading.
Right.
I'm a huge fan of Tyler Henry and the Long Island Medium, and I've never heard them do a reading on a podcast or radio show. So I didn't even think about that. I'm giving this detail because I think it's important for the context. So yeah. We were like, sure, no problem. My questions for Susan were about her story, what we can learn from her. Also, this podcast is not my personal therapy, obviously. It's for you guys, our listeners. So Susan and I have this lovely conversation on video chat, talk for over an hour, and then we wrap. Emma stops the recording. And at this point with guests, I'm usually just like, thanks so much. We'll be in touch, blah, blah, blah. So I'm starting to say goodbye. And she goes, your grandma has the most lovely spirit, by the way. And my heart drops into my butt. Like I was so in shock that she even mentioned her. So I'll give the context. I've talked a little about this, but in the fall, I lost my grandma, who is truly my favorite person in the world. She was my favorite person to talk to. She was the most fun. Honestly, one of the few people that I've ever known in life who is like truly irreplaceable on anyone's account. Like there's no one like her in the world. We lost her. I say suddenly. It was unexpected. She was 94. I always joke that she's the only 94-year-old that like no one saw this coming. But she was healthy. She honestly had a better memory than I have ever had in my life still. Like she was so alive. She lived fully alone. So it was peaceful, but I felt a lot of pain around not just the loss of her physically and missing her, but wondering if she was ready. And I think that's been a really like tough thing for my whole family with this. that's the backstory. I honestly went into this conversation not really thinking about, will she come through? This was my professional brain. You know, I'm like,
yeah,
I'm here for an interview. I'm really excited to learn lessons from this woman as I go into every interview. Like, what is our audience going to want to hear? That was my brain. I was not even thinking of, I'm talking to a medium. I wonder if this person that I miss so terribly will come through. It was just not even a thought for me.
Mm-hmm.
You hear me say in this episode something like, I lost my favorite person in the world to me. I mention it, but I didn't talk to Susan about her otherwise, didn't say anything else. So when she brought up my grandma, as I was saying goodbye to Susan after we stopped recording, I was shocked, immediately started sobbing, my jaw was on the floor. Mm-hmm. So then Susan says, I don't normally do this, but she's been here this whole time, and just started sharing all these things.
Wow.
We're saying how similar our energies are, how I'm such a deep part of her soul. I think, Emma, this is when you left the video call, right?
Yes.
You're like, I'm going to excuse myself.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I think I'm just going to leave this running and exit the room because I want to give Josie her privacy and I'm also her employee.
That was so respectful of you. If roles were reverse and I was sitting in watching you sob, I'd be like, oh, this is tea. I'm going to sit down and get my popcorn. No.
I knew it was like going to be an emotional conversation because it was very quick.
It was very quick.
The interview ended and then all of a sudden she was like really getting into it. And so I was like, I'm going to step away. But I mean, I was sort of in awe of her ability.
I was in true shock. I don't know if I've ever been in shock that much in my life at any other point. So she's starting to say all these loving things. Emma respectfully hops off the call. I am not saying a word. My mouth is a gap. I am literally speechless. So Susan is just saying all these things. It's just like a stream of consciousness. She nailed Betty. It feels so weird to call her my grandma because we never called her grandma. She was always just Betty. She's such not like a grandma. She's Betty. So she nailed Betty's energy to a T. She was saying she's a spitfire who's so full of love. And she is the kind of energy that she could walk in a room and people would know she was there without having to turn around. That is like so Betty. This is when it gets weird. Okay. So she asked, oh, what did you guys celebrate recently? This was a couple weeks after we had this big retirement party for my dad. And my dad had mentioned Betty when giving a speech. Then Susan says, there's like a K name and a J name. And she sees cheersing. And my cousin Katie and her fiance Joey are getting married. And then Susan said that Betty has been there for all the events for the wedding. This part gives me chills. So Betty lost her husband, my mom's dad, over 40 years ago. She never dated again, never really got over it. Like, he was the greatest love of her life still to the day she died. She was so connected to him. And something that my mom and aunt have said that brings them peace is thinking that they're now together.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I still have yet to say a word because I'm just sobbing, my mouth open. So I haven't confirmed anything. Susan says to me, and this I wrote down as soon as I got off this call, because so this is like word for word. She said that she, meaning Betty, experienced a lot of loss in her life. And there are some worrier questions in the family about whether or not she is. So she wants you to know that she is with him.
Wow, that is wild.
She said that Betty says she loves the garden and the white flowers. My mom is currently doing their garden and planted white gardenias because they remind her of her grandmother, Betty's mom.
Oh my gosh, that is so sweet.
Susan says that Betty's always there when we're cheersing, which was crazy because anytime we're together, we always cheers to Betty. Even when just Joey and I are on a date night, we always do a cheers to Betty. Like, it's become such a thing. Because Betty loves a good party. She loves Jack Daniels. So it's hard not to think of Betty when we're drinking alcohol and we're having fun. Like, that's just so her. So we cheers. And so the fact that she nailed that was really weird. The other thing that's really crazy to me is I'm not like a religious person. I have no idea why I started doing this, but I have the last birthday card Betty sent me because she died soon after my birthday. So I have the birthday card and this little bookmark that our cousin had made for us that has Betty's handwriting on it. I have it sitting on my vanity beside my bed. And every single night in my head, I just like do a little like touch it. And I'm like, love you, Betty. It's not a sad thing. It's literally just like a ritual for some reason that I've built up and do every single night. So Susan says something like, The main thing she wants you to know is I love you more. And I immediately knew that it was in response to me saying every single night, I love you, Betty. Then the last crazy thing I'll share, she said so many other things. The day before this recording took place, I saw a ladybug in my bedroom, which you don't see any bugs in California ever. I don't think I've seen a bug in this apartment, which I know, brag, sorry. I don't think I've seen a bug in my apartment since I moved here 4 years ago. You never see bugs. And also, I have this long hallway, the bedroom's at the end of the hallway, the screens are so thin. So I saw this ladybug in our bedroom and I was like, how did a ladybug possibly get in here? That's so weird. But I was just like, I'll leave him. And then even later that day, Joey saw another bug and was like, how did a bug get here? And I was like, is it a ladybug? Don't kill it, because if it's a ladybug, that's bad luck. And we like talked about it. So that was the day before. So then Susan goes, Betty recently tried to send you a sign through a ladybug.
Oh, what? Whoa. That's
and I knew
wild.
Exactly what she was talking about. And then how crazy is this? So obviously after this conversation, I call every member of my family and we're crying, whatever. Day after, my sister texts me and says she is in her office bathroom and a ladybug was on the mirror.
Oh, wow.
It was so crazy. I wanted to share that because it really did transform my grief. Like, it gave me so much comfort to feel validated in Betty still being here in some way. For months, I went down this rabbit hole of watching Long Island Medium on TikTok because honestly, that was one of the only things that gave me comfort, was thinking like, maybe this isn't a loss. It's just a different kind of relationship. So I loved seeing stories like this. And I hope that this experience brings some comfort to anyone out there as well. I also just thought it was like, it was such a crazy story. For sure, one of the top five craziest things to ever happen to me.
Thank you for sharing. I feel like our listeners will appreciate that window into kind of what was going on for you in that moment.
Just so you can picture, after this interview wraps, you can picture me bawling my eyes out and laying on a couch in a fetal position, which is what I had to do after. So this conversation with Susan, if you are a fan of the show Hollywood Medium with Tyler Henry on E!, you are obviously going to love this episode. But also, I want to say this. If you're not into the mediumness, connecting with the departed, it feels a little too sixth sense-y for you, that's okay. Susan has so many amazing takeaways and pieces of advice that anyone can apply to their lives. So we first get into Susan's fascinating life story, which included a crazy near-death experience, how she became a medium, all of those things. But after that, we get into self-love, purpose, grief, anxiety, so many powerful topics and takeaways. So I just want to say, if mediums is not your thing, we've got a lot for you too. Especially after going through a religious study major, which you always laugh at me how much I bring that up. I never thought I would bring up.
It's important. I think it's important.
After going through that, I literally believe anything and everything. And maybe some people might call that naive. But to me, I feel like it's naive not to be open because there's so much that we don't know. So I honestly will believe anything and everything. And I'm good with that. But I know you're someone who is a little more skeptical.
I would say, like, I think that this conversation was applicable to me, even though I'm not so into this kind of thing. Like, the conversation that you had about grief and loss, especially in how we talk about it in our culture, was really important. It's something we need to talk about a lot more in our culture.
Yeah, I think this is beneficial. If you're going through grief, meaning a loved one has recently passed and you're mourning, obviously this is really helpful. But I also view grief as something that we all go through 1,000 times over. It's kind of similar to the episode with Naz Perez where she talks about heartbreak. Yes, can mean a breakup, but it can also mean you lose a friend. You lose an idea of what you thought your life would be. You lose your dream job. With like, heartbreak can mean so many other things. I think that grief, we are constantly grieving old versions of ourselves. We're constantly having to be reborn and grieve what we have lost, whether that's in a physical person or whether that is experiences, versions of ourselves. So I think that this conversation about grief, yes, is important if you've recently lost someone, but it's also really helpful for anyone dealing with any amount of distress, I would say.
I agree with that completely.
I have been like terrified. Like I can't even watch a thriller movie where the good guy shoots a bad guy and it's like a one quick second thing. I can't even watch that because thinking about that extra dying feels traumatic. Like I cannot think about death at all. I feel like our culture does a really bad job of getting us to feel normal about death because death is such a normal part of life and every other culture in the world has such a different relationship with death than our culture does. You know, we're really taught to avoid it. Mm-hmm. We're taught to not think about it. We get uncomfortable when other people are dealing with grief and we don't know how to comfort them. Whereas other cultures in the world have this almost more curious and sometimes even playful relationship with death. They're constantly welcoming in deceased loved ones. They're meditating on the life cycles. There's such different relationships with grief and with death than what we have. So I do feel like this is a really important conversation because our culture is just not good at seeing death as an important piece of life. We're used to kind of ignoring it.
Something I've thought about a lot in the past few months, which I also experienced a loss this year. Mm-hmm. And something I've thought about a lot is how often death is sort of what makes life life, but we don't talk about it like that.
That's such a beautiful way to look at it. We are obviously not a religious brand whatsoever. I personally do not identify myself as religious, but I believe, and also data has shown that spirituality is a key part of well-being, health, happiness, like so many of the things we talk about on this podcast. The purpose of what we do here is to give you tools to live your best life. I think Susan gives so many that can help you get there. And I believe spirituality really looks different to every single person. So take what resonates with you, leave what doesn't.
I know you talk on occasion about spirituality on the podcast, but I haven't. Like, why? Can you tell me a little bit why? Because I'm very curious. I feel like I haven't really experienced that connection in my life. So I would love to hear more about that.
Why spirituality is an important part of health.
Yeah.
There are lots of studies that back this up, but basically there's a correlation between spirituality and physical health. I think a lot of that comes from spirituality impacting mental health. I think a lot of it comes from belief in anything. And that doesn't have to mean religion. That just has to mean I'm aware that there is a purpose to my life. That's what spirituality means. And your spirituality might not be an organized religion or a belief in spirits or a belief in a God. Your spirituality might be my purpose on earth is to create words.
Oh, that really opens my mind. Okay.
Yeah,
that makes a lot more sense to me.
So why spirituality is important for wellness is really that connection to purpose. There's actually an example from Blue Zones. One of the major factors that they found when setting these Blue Zones, which are the areas of the world with the longest living people, basically. And so one of the key factors is this idea of purpose. Lots of different cultures have different words for this. I'm not going to try to pronounce them now because I will butcher them. But that is an example of where spirituality is a key reason that these societies are living so long is because they have this purpose. So again, when I say spirituality is a key piece of well-being, I don't mean go join some kind of church or temple and worship to a god. I mean have a sense of what your purpose is in life. And spirituality, for a lot of people, it means questioning what happens after we die. For me, that's a big piece of my spirituality is questioning that part of it. But again, if that doesn't resonate with you, that does not have to be your spirituality. It's just having the purpose.
That makes perfect sense. And I think that's why a conversation like the one you have in this interview is important to listen to, regardless of, I don't know, maybe what you identify as your spirituality.
Totally. Listening to what other people view about death and loss and what happens after we die, I think that is an important practice because different things resonate for different people. That's why we have so many world religions is because not that one's right and one's wrong. It's that different things resonate for different people. So I'm hoping to provide tools to allow everyone listening to pick up things that resonate or maybe things that they want to question, look into further, and further their purpose in life. That's the goal at the end of the day. Last thing, I want to provide a trigger warning. In our conversation about grief, Susan briefly shares her experience with family members who died of suicide. It's a very brief mention, but still, take care of yourself if any of these topics can be triggering. To me, someone who, like I said, is terrified of these kind of conversations and try to avoid death at all costs and just want to be happy all the time, this was one of the most comforting conversations of my life, truly. And I hope that you all feel the same. All right. I have built it up way too long. Please welcome Susan Grau to the Every Girl podcast. It is so good to meet you. Thank you so much for joining me.
It's so nice to meet you. I heard a lot about you and a lot about your podcast, and I have listened. I just think it's phenomenal.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. That means so, so much. It's such an honor to have you. Seriously. I'm so excited to have this conversation with you, and welcome to the Evergirl podcast.
Thank you. I'm excited.
I want to start with your background. You have such an inspiring, incredible story that I would love for you to share with our audience. Going back to your childhood, how did you first learn that you had this ability and this gift?
Knowing I had it was different than having it. When I was a little girl, I was 3.5 years old, and I remember seeing we had a lot of land, and I saw some animals cross, and I saw them floating. I was sad that they had crossed, but I thought nothing about seeing them. It just was. It was so natural and normal. When I got locked in an unplugged freezer in a garage and I came back from that experience, I saw people. I probably saw them before then, but didn't know I was seeing spirits. My mother had this gift. My sister, my brother, my other brother and father did not. And I don't think they mentioned it, especially my mother, because in those days, she just didn't talk about seeing things. And when she did, they locked her up for a couple weeks. So it tells you how scary it was for her. So when I came back, I could see them under my bed, in the corner of the room, down the hallway, everywhere. And I thought they were the boogeyman. And I'd put a blanket over my head and say, go away, go away, go away. And they didn't. And then they did. So they didn't at first. And then they'd go, oh, we're scaring her. We're actually scaring her. And they'd go away. I wasn't warned when I crossed over that I was going to see things when I came back. I had no knowledge. And of course, at 4.5 years old, you probably wouldn't understand that anyway. After a while, it became abnormally normal for me. I knew it was different, but I didn't talk about it. I did with my mom and my sister, but my mom especially would say to me, do not talk about it. She had a lot of fear. And so I would play with them during the day when I was alone in this room in our house. It was a living room, and my family called it the creepy room because I was talking in there. I would play with them. And then during the day, it was easy. During nighttime, I was terrified. And I can just remember that feeling like the boogeyman's here. I'd crawl in my sister's bed. And then again, after a while, it just became normal. Wow. They'd wake me up. Wake up, wake up. I just died. My name is so-and-so. I'm so-and-so's best friend's brother's sister. This is my name. And you're going to find out I died. And I have a message. I didn't die on purpose. They think I committed suicide because I talked about it, but I didn't. You know, things like that. And so I'd write it down. And it was right. I'd hear the next day that so-and-so's brother's best friend's sister died, and there it would be. They didn't talk about it at all, but I didn't even tell my husband when I got married. I just kept it to myself between me and them, but I always had information. I became a grief and addiction therapist. I never wanted to be a medium. It was not my goal. But as time went on, people would say, how did you know that? Like, how did you know I tried to revive my grandmother? And I'd be stunned. And hearing my mother's voice, don't talk about it, I'd say, I'm sure you told me. And so I became dishonest in it. And that bothered me so much that I finally came out basically and said, I'm a medium. I see spirits. If you don't want to be around me, don't. And I did that on Facebook. And I remember pressing that button and crying, just taking a deep breath and sobbing in fear, but more importantly, in relief.
Whoa. Okay. Oh my God. I have so many follow-up questions, so much to unpack. It almost sounds like there's that shame around it that you probably took on from your mother because she lived in a world where it wasn't accepted. So she didn't want that same judgment for you. So then you took on her shame. I can only imagine how powerful of a moment that was for you to open it up and say, here I am. I'm sure that was such a powerful moment for you.
Extremely. I had a lot of shame anyway. I didn't talk about what happened in the freezer. I just had so many protective mechanisms around me as time went on, I learned that I needed to be protective of myself. And I also carried all that shame. I have no one listening. Maybe I'm lying. Maybe it's not true. Maybe I'm crazy. You know, I went through all of that. But the evidence was so powerful. And I still, to this day, to be honest, when I go into a room to read, I always say, Sudak, show up, please. That's my first comment. And then I say, maybe this is real. Maybe I'm making this up. And I start to actually get that little bit of shame base comes in. Because shame has an acronym. It should have already mastered everything. That's the acronym for shame. So I couldn't master this. I didn't understand it. And so I went to that shame base. And I'd come out and go, I couldn't have known that. How did I know that? So yes, shame was a big part of that.
Going into your story, when you were really young, the earliest memories you can remember seeing animals that had passed, and that was your first visions. And then you go through this near-death experience. And after that is when you start seeing people. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that near-death experience? I know that you were so young, but what do you remember from that near-death experience? Do you remember everything still?
Everything. I remember the door closing. I heard the thump of the garage door. And that was my first, like, this isn't a game. Because at first I thought, I'm in on the game. And I knew I wasn't. They were gone. And it was quiet. It felt like I was caged. And I started to behave like a caged animal in terror. And I was screaming and screaming and screaming. I was facing inward. So I was where the coils were. This was one of the first stand-up freezers. I was screaming as loud as I could. And I saw three lights. And they said, stop screaming. And I didn't know what to think of that. So I screamed even louder. And then I saw them again. And one was much more powerful than the others. Powerful, but not frightening. But I don't know how to explain it any other way. And it said, stop screaming, Susie. We're going to get your mommy. But first, we're going to show you something. And I thought, you know, okay. And then I just felt like I wasn't in my body anymore. And I didn't look back and see my body like a lot of people say they felt. I didn't see any of that. I work with children. I have my doctorate in divinity, and I work with children who have near-death experiences. And almost all of them tell me they never saw their body. I think it would freak a child out. I remember just being pulled. And then I was at the bottom of these stairs, and there was this beautiful Greco-Roman room. I didn't know what that was at the time. So please know everything I'm telling you I know now and have learned over the years what that was. And there were these pillars and an open ceiling. And I thought, I might go up there. And I was there. And there was this giant circle. It was like infinite. It was dark, like a tunnel, but I didn't know it was a tunnel. I called it the well. And when I worked with Dr. Moody, he said to me, Susan, that's the tunnel. And I'm an adult now going, oh my gosh, I didn't even think of that. But it was the well to me. And I was standing at the edge of it with no fear. And I saw this movement in it. And it was twirling and twisting. And it looked like DNA. Somehow I knew it was a connection to people's heart's desires. And I said, where am I? That powerful energy, beautiful light said to me, you're in the room of heart's desires. As soon as they said that, there was this path in front of me. I called it the yellow brick road because I had seen the Wizard of Oz. And it was golden pavers and there were pyramids. And I saw people pulling from the bottom of these pyramids and trying to pave their path. And they would drop and say, for the love of God, help me. Please help me. Sorry, it's very emotional for me. I knew they were suffering. And I watched these beautiful angelic lights come in, pick up the papers, put them to the bottom. And at that moment, I understood somehow this was their light cup. What I did understand was that these pavers were their symbol for me that they were in charge of the outcome. And I knew spirit blessing and blocked everything. I don't know how I knew, but I knew. They said, all you have to do is walk this. And if you see a block, what you run from chases you, what you try to control, controls you. I've used those terms my whole life. I never forgot them. From there, I went to the Room of Knowledge, which was this amazing, I say virtual room now, but there was no such thing then. But it was like virtual books everywhere. And people were opening up these books virtually. And it was like a metaphor for our life journeys, the past lives and the life journey and the choices we're going to make. And they made it very clear to me that everything that we do has free will involved. So we have doors And we can open those doors in different ways so that our soul has expansion and learning capacity. That if they planned everything, we wouldn't be able to learn and grow. So those choices, that free will, was our way of growing and expanding. And so they kind of explained it in a way that I understood. If you were going to be married, who you marry, how long you married, the kind of marriage you have is all free will for soul expansion. So I understood that there are plans, but they weren't set in stone. Then I bounced into the room of companions, which was our animals. And I don't remember seeing any of my animals. And I don't remember seeing any of my loved ones, but I knew they were there. There was this beautiful, I'm going to call it a quartz crystal because it's how it viewed to me. And I can see faces in it, but I knew they were on a different side of something. And I tried to reach into it and I couldn't. And I just had this knowing that if I could, I would never come back. Meaning I would never come back to this lifetime. And I didn't want that. I wanted my mommy. I wasn't afraid. I just knew I wanted to be with her. My mother said she heard your babies in the freezer and she ignored it. She thought she was just hearing something that made her feel fear. She thinks about 20 or 30 minutes later, she heard it again. And she realized my baby's in trouble. I was telling her during this whole time, I'm in the freezer. I'm in the freezer. I think that's how I learned to communicate, honestly. The only thing I can think of. I saw other things. There's more to that story, but it's so long that
I'm sure
the whole podcast.
Yeah, it's hard to put it into a short little description. I'm sure,
it is, and
I'm sure it's hard to even put it into words when it's such a multidimensional experience. But thank you for reliving that and walking us through that. It gives me so much peace when I hear about these experiences, because I love knowing that you felt at peace. I feel like that's the overall thing that I hear from people that have had these near-death experiences is there's no amount of stress, fear. You feel this peace. You don't feel afraid.
Excitement is fear. Think about it. We get on a ride. We're scared. We're excited. It's very exciting there. It's not just boring. We're not just floating around going, da-di-da. You know, it's like, it's very exciting. And filled with wonder, but it's a peaceful excitement. It's not what we do here that is fear-based excitement. It's not like, oh, I got to jump out the airplane and feel that rush. You already are in a rush. It's just natural inside of you. So it's not boring at all. Every time I say to my clients, your loved ones at peace, they go, are they bored? It was one of their first questions. What are they doing there? Like a nothing? And I say, no, it's filled with wonder. It's the ultimate excitement, beauty, energy, but it's all from love and light and peace. There's no fear. We understand the beginning, the middle, and the end. We understand it. So there's nothing to fear.
I think that's so hard for a lot of people to wrap their heads around because we're used to this very three-dimensional world where we don't just automatically know. Well, there are people like you that know things, but for the most part, we need to be explained, this is what you're doing, this is where you're going, this is what you are in a language. You know, we have to use context clues, whereas your experience is there was this knowing, there was this like feeling where everything's okay. It was like a feeling downloaded to you rather than having to be taught something.
Exactly. And the reason we don't remember and we don't know everything here is one, we'd want to be there, but two, we would make different choices. Our soul is made to expand us and heal us. I know people talk about soul wounds. I don't believe in that. I believe our soul is the healer part of us. We have spiritual wounds. We have brain wounds, human wounds. But they're two separate things. And we try to integrate that. And we have to go inside, right? When we're healing something, we don't have to do any of that there. But here, we have to go inside. There has to be something inside of us that helps us heal because it's an inside job. So I believe that's the soul source for us to have healing always and to be well. But I believe that when we get there, those wounds aren't there that we think are. All that gunk doesn't go with us. Our heart has 40,000 neurons and it has memory capacity. It's a mini brain, memory capacity, learning capacity. That goes with us and our soul that is never wounded because they created it to help us heal here. Without that, there's no reason to look inside to heal ourselves. There's nothing to help us. That spiritual part of us goes and we have the memories we need for those choices and that free will. So we do walk through a portion of the beginning of being there through the lessons that we needed to learn.
And then we're in that beautiful peace and just downloaded into us just this amazing understanding of why we had to experience everything and how our soul expanded from those choices. But if we knew that when we came here, we wouldn't need it. I wouldn't choose the same choices I made over my 65 years. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
I would chose very different.
Yeah.
So it makes us free to learn.
That's such a beautiful way that I've never heard it explained, is that the soul is the healer part of us. Something that I've always believed is everyone talks about like self-improvement and wellness and trying to get better and heal. And I always feel like it's not about changing. It's about uncovering so that you get back to where you've always been, you know, that you get yes. that connection back to self. And I feel like that's so much of what you're saying on a deeper level mm-hmm. with the soul, is that the soul is the healer. So getting back to that soul is what heals us. It's not that we need yes. to change and heal the self. It's that we need to uncover everything the world has put on us and that we've experienced to get back to what the soul really is. Is that how you feel?
Yes, exactly. And that bottom line, our true soul path, what they taught me was to love self.
Mm.
We are innately brought here. You know, you hear people say you can't love anyone else if you don't love yourself. Nonsense. That's what I say. Now, this is me, of course, and I honor everyone else's opinions. I just know what I feel and what I've been taught. We innately come here with the ability to love others. We're not judging them like we're judging ourselves. We don't have an innate ability to love ourselves because we have moved that soul space over and said, time to be human. So there's two sides to the mirror. There's the human experience and the soul experience. We say we're humans, our souls having a human experience. We're also humans having a soul experience. And so there's two sides to the mirror. And we need to be able to integrate those two in order to self-love. And that's what you're talking about, is stepping into that soul source. So we'll look in the mirror and say, you're not good enough. You can't do it. You look at your hair, and the soul sense, you're perfect in every way. I love you. You can do this. Go for it. Go out there. We're hearing it. We're experiencing it once we release hitting ourselves. I tell people, put down the beating stick. Please put it down. And I don't always put it down. So I want to say that I have to do it all the time. I'm human. I'm having a human experience, but I'm recognizing the soul has this beautiful capacity to move into us as we're moving towards it and say, you are enough. And if we can just listen to that, the healing begins. And the bottom line is love of self and love of what we're not doing right. You know, acceptance of that. And being willing to love ourselves even when we make the mistakes, because our humanness is meant for that. It is our lesson. And when we can love ourselves even through the mistakes, we have accomplished something great and meaningful in everything that we did. Good and bad is equal in value. They both teach us something. And in fact, I think the negative teaches us more, because then we have to look for that soul part of us to forgive ourselves. It's the people that don't go that direction that end up without the capacity to forgive themselves. Therefore, how to reconnect into the soul without that forgiveness. So the soul is yelling at us, basically, hey, I'm here. Let me help you. And even think about how you have that mixed feeling. You wake up, you don't feel good about yourself. You start talking to yourself. You're hearing that voice that, you know, you're good enough, but, you know, move forward in the day. And before you know it, you're doing better. Or you make a choice not to hear it. And for the whole day or for the week or for the month, you're in that space of, I'm not enough. I can't do this. And I think that the goal is to reach into that space so that you don't want to leave this planet, so that you feel you're worthy of life, so that you don't have that shame race. You will never master everything here. I really believe that full self-love is given back to us when we get there, but we're on the path to get there. So life after life after life, we're trying to get there so that we're at that highest of vibration.
Wow. You bring up such a important part of self-love that I've never heard people talk about this. The ability to love the mistakes, the bad things that have happened, the negative things that you see about yourself. And I love the way that you're explaining it. In order to get self-love, we have to learn. Our soul has to expand. So we have to go through these things in order to get us there. And in that way, we can look at these mistakes and these problems that we've had in our lives in a different way. That's not oh my God, look at all this pain. Why me? Poor me that I've gone through this. Mm-hmm. I'm the worst because I've done this. Instead, I've done this and I've gone through this for the reason to get me closer. It's almost like you can love those things and not be obviously like overjoyed and warm and fuzzy that bad things have happened to you or that you've made mistakes. But it's almost like this difference of it's not because I'm a bad person or it's not because I'm unworthy. It's because I have needed these experiences to feel the expansion. Yes. I can love these things for what they're doing to my soul. And so it's like having that deeper connection and awareness of how your life plays out in like a big picture, I think can help shift people's perspective of not looking at these things like, why me or I'm the worst. These things are happening for me, not to me.
Yes. And I always say I'm better because of it, not in spite of it. In spite of it has such a negative connotation. I have two brothers and a mother that committed suicide. And people say to me, oh my gosh, and I am better because of it. I'm more honest. I'm a better person. I have more compassion. It's kind of like when you're watching a TV show and you're feeling sorry for yourself. And on pops the people who are starving. Where do you go? Compassion, gratitude. You want to share. You want to call and give them money. You become a better person when those things come in front of you that are the seemingly bad. Now, do I want my family to have that happen? No, we are human experiencers and things happen. Our brains are motivated in different areas than our soul. So those things happen, unfortunately, and they're horrible. They're horrific. It's not karma, not in my mind. That doesn't make sense to me. It has to make sense. Spirit's not there to punish you. They love you. So if they love you, why would they allow something so horrific? But we learn from it if we choose. It's not that we learn from the death. We learn from the journey after the death. And that's what gives our soul some way to help us heal. So in spite of it is such a negative connotation where because of it becomes empowerment. And I'm an empowered person. I believe in personal empowerment. I always have. And I walk with that. That doesn't mean I always feel empowered, but I walk with it, even when I don't. I believe we can't think our way into right action. We have to act our way into right thinking because our thinking is distorted. So how would I think my way into it? So I walk with that action and that action teaches me to be empowered.
Even if there are things that are external to us and feel out of control, it gives us a little bit of power over those things because we get to, like you said, action ourselves into the right thinking. What I'm so curious about your experience is there's like a famous quote. Of course, I don't remember the philosopher whoever said it, but it's basically that all of our fear stems from a fear of death or a fear of death without having lived. And I think of that often. I have like such severe health anxiety that all boils down to like, I'm so afraid of death. I'm so afraid of death for the people I love. Did having a near-death experience for you make you more or less afraid of death?
I'm not afraid of death. I'm afraid of how I will die. I fear the humanness of being alive and facing death. I don't like emotional pain and I don't like physical pain, but I know emotional pain gets me where I need to get. Physical pain, I don't like at all. I'd rather just avoid it. I'm afraid of my family dying. I'm afraid of losing them because I'm having the human experience and my humanness wants to hold them, hug them, love them. My humanness wants me to be healthy. My humanness wants me to go get my margarita with my friends or go have Mexican food with my girls, that kind of thing. So yes, of course, I'm having a human experience. The what ifs are very powerful. What we fear, we feed. So if I'm fearing it, I'm feeding it, which makes it my perception, which makes it my reality, because it becomes my perception. And my perception is everything. I perceive it to be, therefore it is. So everything that I fear, I work on releasing. I see it every day when I do mediumship, pain, agony. But I know if I allow myself to go down that rabbit hole, I'm now feeding that fear. So I'm already living it. And so I've taken this beautiful time in my life and now I'm living the fear that I perceived could happen. And it's not a reality. So I have to say to myself when I'm in fear base, not yet, Susan, not today. And that releases me from going down those roads not yet paved. We have no business paving because they're not a reality. So I say, not today, Susie, not today. You haven't lost anyone. Not today, not this minute.
and it puts us back in the now. Any projection you have will be fear-based. Even if it's something wonderful you're projecting and you go, but what if it doesn't happen? What do I have to do to make it happen? We're always trying to be in charge. It makes us feel safe when it's actually just a perception.
That's so interesting for me to hear about your relationship with death. As I was preparing for this and learning so much about you, it made me wonder, because I could see it either being there's less of that unknown for you that a lot of us deal with, that makes death feel like this very scary thing. But then you also have to confront, like you said, all of these heartbreaking experiences and loss. Like, you're feeling loss for so many people all over the world. But you don't have the ability to kind of like turn off the belief about death. Like, it's, I don't know if you saw the Barbie movie, but it's almost like you are constantly like the fear of death Barbie. You know, you can't turn it off. And so it's interesting that you still have so many of those human experiences of I'm afraid of loss. I'm afraid for myself. I'm afraid of what death is like. But you still have the awareness of like the little bit of what happens after and knowing that there's still like life after. And I'm sure that must feel reassuring because it reassures me.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Once you're there, all of that's changed. I liken it to birth. You know how when you're giving birth, that baby's fighting and there's all this going on and there's all this stress and that baby wants to stay warm and cozy in the womb, but the body's going, nope, time to leave, time to go. And this baby's just, you know, people are pulling on it and putting clamps and it's scary. And there's some pain behind that. You poke a baby in the foot with a needle, there's some pain, right? When they're taking the blood and there's all these things that are happening that this baby is not ready for. But the minute you put that baby in mommy's arms, peace, I'm safe. That's how you feel when you pass.
That's making me emotional to think of it that way. The delivery is the hard part, and then it's the peace. And then you get this beautiful life. You get to receive love, and you have to go through the delivery, the pain, in order to get to that love and peace.
Yes. So I'm afraid of the delivery.
Yeah.
Part. Okay.
Understandably.
That's what I don't want to do. And that's our human experience, right? Because when the minute we leave our bodies, that's over. It's over. And not necessarily needing our heart to stop, by the way. That's unnecessary to leave the body. I know for sure with children, and I really believe for the greater part of us, if not all of us, they remove us from our bodies before we have to go through the final stage of, you know, that I can't breathe. Whatever it is we think our brains will go to, I think they're already pulling us out and we're looking down.
Wow.
Oh, wow. You know, look at my family and I love them and all those things. I've always asked spirits when they come to me, you know, did you suffer? And they unequivocally have said, oh no, I was out of my body.
Wow.
Unequivocally.
That brings me so much peace because for me, that has been a really, really hard part of losing someone is worrying about their final seconds and worrying how they felt in those moments. So that is really reassuring to feel like they were already there and that they didn't suffer as much as we might worry that they did. I want to talk to you about grief because it's kind of like the inescapable part of the human experience. We all at some point lose someone that we love. So I would love to talk to you and hear your perspective on it. I recently lost my favorite person in the world. And I had been so afraid of this loss for my entire life. And I was so surprised at how little it felt like loss to me. I don't know how else to explain it. Grief really surprised me, how I actually felt it in my body. So I would love to hear, like, what is grief? How do you define it?
Wow, that's a huge question and a good one. A good one. No one's ever asked me that. Grief is singular. We grieve alone. And no matter who's around us, it's ours to own. Nothing can fix it. It's in charge. I always tell people grief is in control of you. You are not in control of it. And when you can accept that, you can walk that journey, whether it be positive, negative, painful, a relief, whatever the experience is, it's in charge. So people want to get out of it usually. And I tell them, let grief do its job. You could be 5 years later and it's still in the corner doing pushups and here you are somewhere and boom, there it is. Strong as ever. And we have to allow that. We have to shake hands with it. We have to accept it in because it is part. We grieve from the moment we're born. We're grieving at getting born. We grieve over the smallest of things. My favorite pencil. This sounds so silly, but I grieve. I went through all the stages. Denial. It can't be gone. I'm searching everywhere. And then the next stage of bargaining and anger. Gosh, where did I put that? Okay, I'm going to find it. I'm going to find it. Then I get to that acceptance. I'm not going to find it. And then I surrender. I need a new pencil. I need to move forward. Even if I don't want to, I need to move forward. That's the smallest of grief, of course. But all those griefs we have prepare us for the larger griefs of loss of the people we love. So whether we know it or not, we're being prepared throughout our whole journey. Our soul is preparing us for the understanding of what's right and the next right thing to do. Grief is our greatest teacher. I tell people, you don't have to judge it. You don't have to control it. You don't have to understand it. You don't have to ask why. Just accept it. And when you accept it, you are able to heal it in some form. Your soul steps in and says, okay, they've accepted this. They're not fighting me anymore. Now let me help them walk this journey. And it is the journey. So in those first years or months, whatever it is for that person, because they solely grieve, no one can be inside of it. Because I've lost my mom and someone else has lost their mom doesn't mean they're grieving the same way as I am. Our relationships with grief are different. As we're walking that relationship with it, and it is a relationship we've had our whole lives, we have to recognize that so that we're not in so much fear. This is a relationship we have, and we've had it since we were coming out of the womb. I think in the womb, we have grieved the knowing that we won't be in the spirit world for a long time. Time there, of course, is not existent. If I put you in a room, gave you no window, no map, no calendar, no watch, in time, there would be no time. It would not exist. Here, it's linear. So we know that coming into this world, and we know that things are going to change dramatically because we're prepared. Even though we don't want it and we're scared, but at some point where our soul is matching our birthing, I think we lose that memory, that understanding. Now, do we lose it completely? No. Children are the closest to the spirit world. So the memories are still there in some form. That's why they can talk to them so easily, as are the elderly. But in between, we're going to deal with grief. My relationship with grief is I shook hands with it. I didn't necessarily befriend it. It's not my best friend. But I shook hands with it and I accepted it. That this is part of it. That doesn't mean I don't grieve. I grieve deeply, but I know it's there. So I'm going to shake hands with it instead of fighting it. And it gives me a sense of peace. Doesn't mean I accept that they left or I want them to leave. I want to be very clear about that because I think people sometimes hear me say that and they think, so you want me just to accept I lost my child? No, I want you to accept that grief is part of your journey. We don't totally understand it and we don't need to understand it. You know, people will say to me, why? And I say, if I told you why, would it change your pain? No, I'm going to tell you what and how. What do you need to do differently? What do you need to accept? What do you need to conceptualize for yourself to survive this? And how do you do that? And those are the real questions of getting through such a traumatic event as loss.
So kind of like the way to, I don't want to say the right way or best way, because you said grief is such a personal experience. It's different for everybody, but maybe the most supportive way to view loss and handle grief is to allow yourself just to feel it, is what you're saying. Don't try to distract yourself. Don't push it away. Allow yourself to be in it.
Yes. And it's that way with everything, isn't it? We're talking about coming back to where our feet are, right? Be in the moment. Allowing ourselves to be where we are, right where we are. People say to me, I don't know what to do. And I say, you don't have to do anything. And they go, but I need something to do. And I say, then do the next right thing. It might be doing the dishes. It might be laying in bed and covering your head. Just do that. Be where you are and don't judge it. Don't push it out because it won't work. When we do that, when we let go of the outcome, like, am I going to feel this way forever? Yeah, all those things we do to ourselves that our thinking does to us, and we just let it be. We walk the journey, as painful as it is, as scary as it is. There is another side. Do we heal completely? I don't think we ever feel okay with losing someone we love. But we do surrender to it at some point in the process of grief. And once we do that, we come to a place of understanding that we are not in control of it anymore. Nothing we do will control this, and all we can do is be in it and walk it. I tell myself, Susan, cease fighting everything and everyone. Set your boundaries, set them strong, set them with love, but cease fighting everything and everyone, and that includes grief. When I do that, I'm now in it, experiencing it, journeying through it to come out to a different outcome.
You bring up such an amazing point that's making me realize a part of our, I don't know if it's our culture, if it's just a part of the human experience, but we are somehow programmed to think that we are supposed to be feeling uncomfortable feelings. We're supposed to be happy. We're supposed to have fun. And the happy feelings are for feeling, but that's not true. All feelings are for feeling. And I think sometimes people put suffering on themselves, myself included. I've absolutely been here where I'm like, I'm feeling so sad. And then I put the suffering on myself on top of that because I feel like feeling sad is not good. Like, it's not what I should feel. I should be happy. So let me get out of it. Let me avoid it. Let me distract. And then I feel like we're putting suffering on ourselves rather than what you're saying of just feeling it, allowing ourselves to be in it rather than constantly trying to struggle our way out, probably would help ease the suffering to actually allow for the grief and like processing to come through.
Right. And remember what I said, what you run from chases you, what you try to control controls you. So the goal is to step into it. And there's the fear, right? If I step into this, I'm going to lose myself and never come back. You don't have an option. You're going to have to at some point. So if you just let go and allow, you can process through it. And does it happen faster? No. It's going to go at its pace. You're not in charge. That's a scary thought, but it is the truth. It's kind of letting go of a car that's in water and it's spinning and you let go of the wheel because you're not in charge of the car anymore. And it's spinning and you come to a hard state. And you go, okay, I let go because I had to. I couldn't control the vehicle, but I'm safe. Here I am. We don't have to manage it. We simply have to be there. A Buddhist monk, her name is Pema Chodron. I don't know if you've ever heard of her. She's amazing. She wrote a book, When Things Fall Apart. And she talks about stepping into your pain, not right. Step into it. And it will change the picture of pain. We put this picture on our mantle. We go, this is what I want it to look like. So I'm going to pretend it does. And at some point you have to smash that picture and go, okay, I'm going to put the real picture up there. This is what it looks like. And I need to face that. I don't know who said this. I'm like you, I don't remember the philosophers, but there's a saying that if you want to see the truth, you have to step outside of the picture. You have to step outside of the frame to see it. And that's what I'm trying to get people to do, is to step outside the frame so they can see the truth, so they don't have to change the truth in order to survive. They can just be in it.
Because I've dealt with years of chronic constipation, indigestion, and painful bloat after literally every meal, I have truly mastered my gut health protocol. I chew my food slowly, get into rest and digest before eating, and take Hum's Flatter Me Digestive Enzyme supplement before meals. You probably already know of Hum Nutrition. They're a leading vitamin brand on the forefront of wellness, and their digestive enzyme, Flatter Me, has garnered a cult following after going viral on TikTok for its benefits. Flatter Me is clinically tested to debloat fast and works after only one use. Seriously, you guys, it is the ultimate debloating hack. I like it for everyday use. It's filled with clean and natural ingredients that are overall good for the gut. But before I eat pizza or pasta or any foods that typically have made me bloated, it's a game changer. Like, I can actually go out to dinner, order a cacio e pepe with extra lemon, and not get uncomfortably bloated because I took a Flatter Me digestive enzyme before eating. To try for yourself, we got you an amazing deal. Head to humnutrition.com, that is humnutrition.com, and get 40% off your first order of $39 or more with code EveryGirl40. Go grab your Flatter Me digestive enzymes today as this offer expires soon. That is humnutrition.com and use code EveryGirl40 for 40% off your first order of $39 or more. Happy digesting. What has your ability, your gift, your mediumship helped you learn about the human experience? Like, what lessons have you learned that you wish everyone on earth could know?
They're here. I always think poltergeists, they're here, they're back. And people go, don't do that. But they're not scary. They love us. You know, it's just kind of my sense of humor because I always have to tell myself, they're here. They're beside you. I'm not a believer that they can see everything because I didn't, and that they can read your minds because I couldn't. So I have to go with what I understood. But I do know that they know the beginning, middle, and end. And I do know that they're here beside us. It's impossible for me to give evidence that they aren't. So they are here. And as soon as I accept that, I come to a place of peace. Even if it's for one moment, just one moment of peace is what we need when we're grieving and we're afraid that we've lost them. It's not tangible. Yes, I want to hug them and hold them and feel the human experience. Of course I do. Hence grief. But they are here. They are here. They are loving us. They are with us. They are guiding us. They are helping us. They can't do everything we want them to do. People always ask me, then why aren't they stopping this from happening? And I say, because if they could, they'd stop everything. You'd never learn a thing because they love us. They don't want you to suffer at all. But they are here. And I think that's the most important thing I want people to understand. And they do love you, and they're not all in space somewhere, floating around, not there for you. They want to be there for you, and they want to talk to you, and they want to give you messages and signs. We're just so busy in our human experience that we push it away. So pausing and experiencing them is the most important part of it. Take a breath. I believe in the three A's, and they're my little mantra when I teach mediumship. It's awareness. I'm aware that they're here, and they're aware I'm aware. Okay? A vibration rises. I accept that they're here, and they see that I've accepted it. Vibration rises higher. And I go into action. So awareness, acceptance, and action. Action is just trust. I trust they're here. No matter what the message is, I don't say, they didn't say that. I just thought they would. That's what I think they'd say. I trust it. And then they know I'm trusting it. So here they come. Signs and more signs and more signs and more signs. When I say to them, I don't trust that sign. I think I just thought that. They go, okay, she's not going to hear me that way. I have to find a new way. So they're always bouncing from one experience to the next, trying to give us that sign because we're pushing it out. So those three A's help my students and help me.
Are there specific signs that people can look out for from their loved ones, or are signs so different depending on the spirit, the soul, and the individual?
They have very specific signs, like birds are a big sign for them. We all see birds. It's different. That bird moves around us or chases us or comes to the window every morning. We go, what is that bird doing? That's when you know it's a sign. Or that feels like my mom's around just now. I just felt her energy when you see that bird. That's a sign. It's opening up a pathway of acceptance of their presence. And that's what they're trying to do with those signs. Flashing lights. You say, if you're really here, flash light. Doesn't happen. The next day they figure out how to do it. Flash, flash, flash. And you go, oh my God, I know it's them. I can feel it. Familiarity is everything. A loved one has a familiar feeling. It's like, oh, I know that first smell. Oh God, I feel them next to me. I have chills. I can feel the love penetrating me. So that's a sign. When you're feeling those familiar experiences or feelings, that's a sign that they've sent to you. And when you accept that, once again, they accept you've accepted it. And here they come. People say, why can you see it and I can't? I'm going to make that really clear to people so they understand there's nothing wrong with that. They are able. Think of a sloth, okay? And I love sloths. Very slow moving and slow in vibration. Extremely slow vibrating in movement. That's the human. You have the medium who's had a higher vibration experience in some way. They're the butterfly. And then you have that, the hummingbird. As they're coming in, by the time the sloth has moved to see them, they've gone 60,000 places and they've given a million signs and they've missed a lot of it. The butterfly is a little bit higher vibrating, so it's moving kind of close to that energy of vibration, the medium. So they go, I saw something, I felt something. We missed a lot of it. That's why when they drop in front of us and tell us everything, we can't give everything. But we see some of it. Remember, we're having a human experience, so we're only so far in vibration. And then, of course, they're the highest vibration. So what we have to do is raise our vibration. Well, grief is the lowest vibrating energy there is, lower than depression. So they're trying to fight their way into that and drop their vibration enough for you to experience them. And you're vibrating so low that you can't experience them completely. And they can't drop that far. That's not what it's like there. Beauty and peace. So they drop to where they can, and we have to rise. I try to get my students and my clients to get to that butterfly vibration. Maybe it's music. Maybe it's dancing. Maybe it's laughter. Maybe it's family gatherings. Anything they can do to vibrate high enough, even for a moment, that they can get that sign clearly and you're able to recognize it.
I'm sure it's not this logical, but to me, that also makes sense of they want to be remembered and felt in the happy moments. They don't want to be felt as this like sad loss. They want to be there where there's the laughter and the fun and the love. You know, they want to be a part of that and they want to be felt in that, I would think. So to me, that even logically makes sense.
Yes. But I do want to say this, even in our lowest vibration, they're still there nurturing us. They are. We just aren't able to connect vibrationally. It doesn't mean they're not there in some form. It may not be in signs. They're there. They're always there. And they can't give us signs of that lowest vibration. But it doesn't mean they're not emotionally supportive. It doesn't mean they're not there going, I love you. I love you. I'm here. Don't cry. I'm okay. They're doing that. So they know we're crying, but they're not going, oh my God, she's crying. I feel terrible.
Yeah.
That's not how it works there. They don't go to that lower vibrational feeling. They understand we need this experience or we will use this experience for growth. So they are not vibrating in the negative. They're not vibrating in the pain because they understand the beginning, the middle, and the end. So they're going, oh my God, Susie's going to grow so much from this. He's going to be a better person because of this loss. And I know she doesn't know it now, but she is. They're in a different mindset. They're not even in a mindset. They're in a soul set. They're in a different soul set than our mindset. And so they see it very differently.
That makes so much sense. Wow. Oh my gosh. I know I've kept you way over time already. So I could keep talking to you forever, but we're going to wrap up some very quick rapid fire questions. First one, the most surprising lesson you've learned from spirit or from doing readings?
That we survived. Honestly, that we can survive anything and that they are there to help us do just that.
So beautiful. Wow. The best piece of advice that you've ever received?
Don't look too close. I know that sounds crazy, but we are so busy looking and trying and working so hard that when we're trying too much. And when we're doing too much. So we're trying too hard or doing too much. And when I look too close and I'm studying it, I lose my ability to step into my soul and feel and experience and my intuition, which is in the gut, because I'm in my head. Get out of your head.
I love that. I'm going to be repeating that to myself a lot. Last question, Susan, a book that changed your life.
Oh, there's so many, but I would say Conversations with God. I was blown away because it made so much, not every single thing. We all have different ways of interpreting things, but it makes so much sense to me. So much sense. I also love Louise Hay. So any book that she wrote, Heal Yourself. Raymond Moody. I could go on, but you know, I was very cautious not to read afterlife books because I felt like it would taint my experience and I might put that in my subconscious mind and then repeat that as my experience. So I was really careful about it. A Life After Life was probably one of the only afterlife books that I really embraced. And read the whole thing because I didn't want to be tainted because it made sense to me what they saw. But there's so many. I don't even know how to answer it. It's such a powerful question.
I know. This is always the hardest question because they're like, well, I have a laundry list. How do I even narrow it down? But those are such great recommendations for people to start with. And Susan, where can everyone find you and get your book?
They can find me at susangraw.com and they can find me on social media at Susan Graw Official. On any social media platform, which can take them to my website if they need me. And my book, Infinite Life, Infinite Lessons, it talks about everything we've talked about. It talks about the pure love of spirit. It talks about my experiences in my life journey. It touches on everything. that Spirit wants us to know that I learned, and it's filled with knowledge and lessons and exercises to tap into that soul space. Because we can hear all this stuff and it sounds real simple, but it's not easy.
I can't wait to read it. Thank you so much for having this conversation with me. I really cannot thank you enough. It was just hearing your explanation of things and your experience was so comforting to me. I know it is for so many of our listeners. So thank you for your time and for sharing your gift with us.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me. This has been wonderful. And I just adore you. You're so clear when you're speaking and I'm just really grateful.
Oh my gosh, that is such a compliment. Thank you. Thank you, Susan.
You're welcome.
If you enjoyed the episode, I know I sure did. Please do not forget to rate, review, and subscribe. It really makes a huge difference for our show so we can keep growing and bringing the content that you love. If you want more info, you can find us at The Evergirl Podcast on Instagram or theevergirlpodcast.com. Talk to you next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.